Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. This show, as always, is presented by Oregon Sports News. Well, you may have heard there's a little thing called the NBA Draft happening this week. We think Portland might have a shot at a real contender of a player. We hope, anyway. There's also a lot of talk about who they might trade, who they might trade for. You know, maybe they'll just give the pick away. They've done that before. It hasn't necessarily helped, but, you know, we brought cash considerations here a couple years ago, and they've been a really great player for us, so you never know. Everything could happen. Anything could happen. It's a lot like the postseason. You just don't know what to expect. You know, some years you win the championship. Other years you're swept by the Pelicans. Other years you're swept by the Golden State Warriors. Other years you win a series against Houston with, like, 0.6 seconds on the clock. Anything can happen. We don't know what to expect. No one knows what to expect. Even the teams drafting don't know what to expect. I mean, you've all been involved in fantasy drafts before. It's chaos. No one knows what's going to go on. We probably know who's going number one, but after that, it gets a little dicey. So, after a long-winded opener, I want to bring on my really good friend and co-host and comrade and co-pilot, Bryant Knox, who mysteriously is not broadcasting from a rooftop this week. But he's still broadcasting from a really cool place you guys have probably heard of. I'll let him introduce that. Bryant, how the heck are you, and where are you tonight?
I am very good. I'm sitting here contemplating ordering my cash considerations Trailblazers jersey. I have personally, like you, been a big fan of cash considerations, Mr. Considerations, for a very long time. So I'm thinking about finally diving in and getting that jersey. I'm broadcasting here today from my office, but it's an exciting update because it's my brand new office.
Yes.
I moved back across the river to the west side.
Welcome home.
You know, thank you. It's good to be home. I had my LeBron coming home moment.
Yeah.
I went off. I had a good time kind of balling out on the east side for a while. Don't get me wrong. It was a ton of fun, but it's going to be back home on the west side, settled in. I'm not going to lie to you. My internet is way more strong out here. So if you got used to hearing my voice cutting in and out over the last year of these podcasts, you're going to be disappointed. This is an improvement. I don't know. But overall, lots of good things happening, including me literally looking up what it would cost to order a cash considerations jersey as we speak.
Should there be an additional fee for that? Like, do you have to give up, you know, one of your old jerseys? Kind of like, in order to get cash considerations in the NBA, typically you give up a player or a draft pick. Is that something you have to do to get your new jersey? Like, do you give up the Greg Oden bobblehead? How does this work?
Well, the Greg Oden bobblehead is untouchable. I know I've mentioned before his hands broke off and I just decided not to glue them on. So, like, that is untouchable. It is what it is. You know, there's a lot of Seahawks fans who probably listen to this. I have a Brandon Marshall Miami Dolphins jersey that is basically, you know, not, I've worn it a couple times, but I've washed it a couple times, which was also a bad idea because the letters are kind of falling off. So it's like,
gotta go inside out, Brian. That's an amateur move. Come on.
I guess I'm not good at this. So maybe I could give up my B Marsh jersey in the process. We'll have to see.
You're not slowing it up in the east side anymore. You're in the west side. You got to learn how to wash your regulars and keep them looking nice and posh and clean. You're in the preppy side of town now. You got to act like it.
Man, it's been too long. I got to relearn.
That's all right. We're a very welcoming community out here, so we'll welcome you back to the burbs. You know, you're the decision special that I watched on ESPN Ocho was really touching, and I felt really happy to be in a community where you were coming to live here, because we really like having, you know, brother man come over live over here, because you're really good at sports, you're really good at life, you know, maybe not so good at washing the clothes, but we can teach that. And, you know, there's some other things. You know, I think you've got a cat, you've clearly got a microphone and a computer and some headphones, so you've got, like, the utility belt that you need to survive out here, and after that, you know, you'll figure it out. So we'll jump into our first topic, which is really our only topic, which is the NBA draft. And, you know, many people have a lot of things they want to see the Blazers do in this draft. I'm not really sure what we're going to get because there's not a whole lot of stuff for Portland to deal, but we'll kind of see what they do. I mean, Neil Olshey is the GM for a reason. I hope anyway, Paul Allen, if you're listening, we would love you to call in and tell us what that reason is. But at this point, you know, we have the number 24 in the first round. I honestly don't know if we have a second round pick. I'll let Bryant touch on that. But there's some players out there that you can draft. There's some players you could trade for. There's some things that can be done. I'm not really sure what Portland's going to do, but it just seems like this is the time to kind of make a move. I mean, Neil Olshey has talked about being in the draft and being aggressive, and I just don't know if we have the pieces to do that or not, but I guess we'll find out. And part of that is just knowing what pieces to move and what pieces not to move. So I guess without knowing what we're going to do and how you kind of go through the draft blind, Bryant, I guess my question to you is, without knowing if you're going to get a real good piece in return, what's your knee-jerk reaction? Would you rather trade the pick or keep the pick? And those are your two options. Which one would you rather have, not knowing what you're getting? And then we can go into some of the roulette options of what you might get. But which one of those are you going with out of the gate?
Going in blind out of the gate, I definitely want to keep the pick. And I will say, for anybody listening who's saying, hey, trading the pick isn't even an option because they traded picks last year and the Stepien rule says you can't trade. Well, there is a loophole in that Stepien rule that says if you draft a player on their team when there is a trade agreed in principle, that is A-okay. So you can make the pick for someone else and then trade the rights to a player. That's fine as far as the league standards go. That said, I only wanted to get that out of the way for any anybody who was listening thinking, hey, you can't do that, because technically you can. Even knowing that, I want to keep the pick.
Why does that rule even to apply to a team, not the Clippers? I mean, that's who it was written for. Why not just apply it to them alone?
I feel like that's a little unfair to just say, you know what, you only one team gets it. I will correct you real quickly, though. It was the Cavs, not the Clippers.
Oh, okay.
It was an exec for the Cavs who traded, gosh, I can't even remember how many years in a row it was, but it was like 4 years in a row from picks to try to get, you know, veteran players or better players, and it just flopped every time, and it put the franchise in such a bad hole. So that I think that if you look at it and say, hey, Cavs, ever because of this, I might actually be okay with that, because the Cavs haven't really deserved a lot of the good fortune they've had.
Right.
LeBron chose to come back despite all of the things with Dan Gilbert and whatnot. So maybe if we're just talking about the Cavs, I'm okay with it. But as far as a league-wide rule goes, yeah, technically it applies to Portland here, but there is a workaround. But even with the workaround...
So do you think that drafting Anthony Bennett was like the Cavs' way of showing the league they don't need to trade the pick to waste it? Or how did that work out?
I think you're exactly right.
Where is he now? Is he still in the league? I mean, I know he was like a year or two ago when they traded him to the Timberwolves, but what's happened since then? Is he still in the league? Do you know?
Oh, he's not in the league right now. Gosh, I know that he maybe went back to Canada for a little while. I don't think he played in any sort of Canadian basketball leagues or tournaments, though. The one thing that I do know for sure is that he was a part of the G League last season, or maybe the season before. I just don't know if he is trying to be a perpetual G League player or if he's using that to try to get back into the league at the bottom of a roster. That I'm not sure. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think it really matters. He will forever be known as one of the worst number one picks of all time.
Well, Anthony Bennett, if it matters, we're thinking of you. You're our Darko Milicic. So that's what matters to us. So let's go with the hypothetical that you have to trade the pick. Let's say that there was some rule in place saying that since you traded last year, you have to trade the pick this year, even if it means drafting a player and then trading them, kind of like when they did with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson a few years ago, who probably would have been a nice piece to have right now. I'm going to say it out loud. It helped us get some other pieces, but I wouldn't mind having that kid on the roster right now. He's a really solid defender. Can't shoot, obviously not, but you'd basically have another Aminu coming off the bench, which wouldn't hurt. So let's say you have to pick one of these four targets, Bryant, and you tell me what you would give up to get these. Realistically now, this isn't the trade machine. You've got to actually come with real offers. So the first one is, I believe Memphis is number four in the draft, and they're just dangling that pick for anybody that wants it. I don't know why they don't want it, but they clearly don't. They're trying to get rid of Chandler Parsons, which, honestly, if I'm dangling a trade pick out there, I'm not adding Chandler Parsons to that pick because I don't understand how that benefits my trade partner. So why would they want that? But so that's trade option number one. You get those two pieces. In addition to number 24, what are you willing to give up to get that?
Well, just to jump the conversation off, it's kind of the reverse of what you said. It's not that Memphis would be trying to get rid of number four and tacking on Chandler Parsons as kind of a kicker. It's that they want desperately to get rid of Chandler Parsons. And they're saying, hey, if you want to take on him and his contract, we'll also throw in the number four pick. If I'm Portland, like a lot of what's going on at number four, obviously I don't like Chandler Parsons and his contract, and so it makes it super difficult to take on that deal without giving up money. But I think what you could look to say, we're not buying into the concept of Yusuf Nurkic. Memphis, you need to start planning for a post-Marc Gasol era, so let's make a deal surrounding Yusuf Nurkic, let's say Evan Turner, to match Chandler Parsons' contract, because as much as we talk smack about Evan Turner around here, he is a far more productive player than Chandler Parsons right now. So Memphis is actually getting the better deal out of those forwards, even though they're both albatrosses of contracts. So Mitch and Turner for, let's just say, Chandler Parsons, a number four pick. I love that deal for Portland because all of a sudden you have a chance to take someone like a Mohamed Bamba, who I am very high on right now, by the way, at number four, and you get someone in Chandler Parsons who is not going to be a main contributor for you, but is basically going to take the spot of Evan Turner and let Mo Harkless really step into that role that Evan Turner was kind of half in and half out of.
Well, and ironically, you get Parsons, who you typically, I guess you could say you wanted to sign before you signed Evan Turner that same summer. So I guess it's addition by subtraction. I mean, yes, you lose Nurkic, but maybe you didn't get him before if you had gotten Parsons somehow. I don't know how that works, but let's say that's the math that works. You know, 2 + 2 = fish, that kind of math. And you get the number four, so you're moving up in the draft. So you essentially are saying Nurkic is worth the number four pick in the draft, right? Am I reading that correctly?
If you're Memphis, it could be, because think of it as a two-step process, right? You give up the fourth and you get Nurkic, and you're saying, well, maybe Nurkic isn't worth the fourth pick. Two is that you now make Marc Gasol expendable. And Marc Gasol is going to bring in a nice haul. I don't care where he goes. You're either base or you're going to get a nice draft pick. Maybe you add depth to your roster, which drastically needs it ever since they have kind of fizzled out the grit and grind era. I like that deal for both sides.
Do you think it was poor planning for the future on Memphis's part, not knowing there was a third Gasol brother? Not knowing that there was not a third Gasol brother?
I think they were honestly banking on the fact that Pau Gasol was going to want to come play at like the end of his prime with his brother and his arrears, and that just didn't work out. And when that didn't work out, they were like, oh, I guess time for plan C.
Well, I mean, there's still time. He's in San Antonio wasting away. They could just bring him back for, like, one last year of the Gasol brothers and see if that's enough to get a championship. It hasn't worked at the Olympic or the World Basketball Championships level, but Who knows? It could work in the NBA. Most of the international players are winning championships here. Why not them?
And you know what? With San Antonio trying to figure out what the heck to do with Kawhi Leonard right now, basically everybody is expendable on that roster, including Kawhi himself.
Absolutely. And we'll get to him in a minute, because he's definitely a target we're going to discuss, even if he's not someone that Portland can necessarily snag without giving up too much. But so let's say you take a pass on Memphis's offer just because you hate it. Let's say that. So the next guy I would say is within range for Portland that they would think of as a reasonable target would be Kevin Love, assuming that LeBron's not coming back to Cleveland, which I don't think he's going to, but let's say for argument's sake, he's not. Kevin Love would be an expendable piece because he's not a guy you build around, so Cleveland would obviously want to get rid of him and get picks and younger players. Who could you trade to Cleveland to get Kevin Love in return?
I think if Kevin Love is up for grabs and Portland's interested in him, I think they have to do the near unthinkable and give up CJ McCollum in the process. But what I will say, throwing CJ into the deal means you probably get Kevin Love and the number 8 pick in the draft. I don't think Portland has anybody behind CJ, Yusuf Nurkic included, who is going to interest Cleveland, whether LeBron stays or leaves. I just don't think Portland has the trade assets for that. But jump up to that next tier of trade asset and offer up CJ, you have more leverage there, because Kevin Love, as good as he is in a vacuum, has not always been the best player for Cleveland. And so that allows you to get him back. We're giving up the best player in this deal, which means you're also going to give us that number 8 pick, and we're going to be able to find a potential, you know, third option with that selection.
So that's we're getting a little closer to what probably will happen. I mean, I think that trade's very realistic. Don't get me wrong. I have a hard time believing that Neil O'Shea pulls the trigger on it, just because it's one of his guys for a guy he may not be super high on, even though number 8 gets him the opportunity to get another guy he's really high on. Maybe even a CJ clone, you never know. But let's say that didn't work out. And I guess before we move on, are you a fan of that trade? I know you said you kind of liked the Memphis trade because you get so much with the number 4, but would you be willing to get Love and the number 8 for CJ? Is that a good deal to you?
I'm less inclined to do this one just because I think that the talent a little bit after 4. What I will say, though, is a very polarizing player in Michael Porter Jr. continues to slide down draft mock drafts and, you know, draft big boards because of his injury troubles. And clearly Portland is not going to dive all in on an injury-prone forward, just because there's so much risk there. But especially in Portland, there's a public perception that you don't want to do that. But I will say, though, the fact that Porter keeps dropping is something that Portland could look to take advantage of if they move into the lottery but not into the top 5. I think he is well worth the risk. And if you get a Kevin Love and, let's say, a Michael Porter Jr. out of this, then you have Damian Lillard as your clear-cut number 1 option, as he has been for a while now. And then you have Kevin Love, who's going to be an elite rebounder and a guy who spreads the floor. And then a true second option, but with a much bigger NBA body in Michael Porter. Probably convince me that that's a good deal. I would need to look at it a little more closely.
So let's say that deal doesn't go through as planned. So now our next guy we're targeting is the guy who wants out of San Antonio, allegedly. I haven't heard this from him personally, but, you know, he stopped calling a few months ago when he stopped playing, just the way it works. So, Kawhi, if you're out there, we're thinking of you. We love you, buddy. But we get that you need to be radio silent for a while you figure out your future. But speaking of Kawhi Bryant, you know, even though we all went to kindergarten together, we've known him our whole lives, we haven't heard from him in a while, how big would it be to bring him here to the Rose City? Is that a trade you'd want to go after?
100%. And I love CJ McCollum, but I would throw him into a deal for Kawhi Leonard any day of the week. And it has less to do with CJ, and it has more to do with what you're getting back. I'm not of the mindset that you have to break up the backcourt to get better. I really think that if there's an option out there, you can't be stubborn about it, and you can't just hold on to your guys because they are your guys. Cough, cough, Neil Olshay. But what I will say is that, you know, Olshay himself has talked about, he's used the phrase equal value or commensurate value or however he's phrased it. He's used that as kind of his crutch. And I think that it makes sense. I wouldn't want to give up CJ for scrap either. But if you could leverage that conversation against San Antonio and say, you have no leverage in this conversation because Kawhi has already said he wants out, and we have probably the best player you're going to be offered every time, I'd love to see it happen.
Well, and at that point, you get who you were envisioning Nick Batum becoming, and you give up a guy who we love here in Portland, and he's an amazing shooter and an amazing offensive guard, but lacks something on the defensive side that you really are sorely missing here. Whereas with Kawhi Leonard, you get a guy who could score 20, 30 points a game. He can get rebounds. He can block shots. He can get steals. He's on an on-ball defender. He's a perimeter defender. He's a guy you could really use to shut down, say, a guy like Kevin Durant or LeBron James if you get deep in the playoffs. And I feel like you're going to need a guy like that, or like James Harden. You're going to need someone like that also that can shut down the elite scorers in the NBA, as he's shown he can. So obviously all of that sounds fantastic and probably worth the risk. But speaking of risk, the guy barely played this year and no one can really tell us why. Are you at all worried about an ongoing injury issue or a refusal to play? Or do you think that's already played itself out and he'll be healthy next year?
It's played itself out. And I also think it was a little more dramatic than it needed to be. I think he probably had issues with the Spurs organization beforehand. I think maybe knowing his personality, he doesn't want to be the clear-cut superstar franchise figure. I think he would rather where he can blend in a little bit more. And, you know, on paper, the Spurs are that organization. Don't get me wrong. They always have been. But in a post-Tim Duncan era, they have very much tried to make him the face of the franchise. And I don't think that's what he wants to be. So playing, unquote, air quote, behind Damian Lillard is actually an amazing situation for him, not even in a basketball sense, just in a personality sense. And then you include the basketball side, which is that Lillard can, you know, take the big shots, handle the ball coming up the court, and then Kawhi can do dirty work, but really he's still going to be a 23 points per game kind of guy. I think it works out well for everybody to pull it off.
So that's probably our dream scenario at this point. The last one I'll throw at you is, let's say Cleveland's willing to do a sign and trade with LeBron James, or maybe LeBron's going to keep in, you know, not opt out of his current deal and sign with the team on a 1-year contract. Is that a deal you're willing to go after, or would you rather put everything you have in getting Kawhi Leonard or getting Memphis's pick?
It's tough to say if I would choose one over the other, just because I think the Kawhi one makes too much sense. I think getting a Bamba-type player at number 4 makes a ton of sense. But, you know, I really have to just kind of say it, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, I can't bet against LeBron James until something proves me otherwise. And so if you have a chance to get LeBron, that should be your number one option. Even if it means giving up Lillard, and by the way, I am not an advocate of giving up Lillard. I will say CJ makes more sense and is, should not be untouchable. Damian Lillard is basically untouchable in Portland, but if you can get a LeBron-type guy, then you float any piece you have to make it happen. Because let's say LeBron comes to Portland and he decides, you know what, I need to opt out of my second year and I move on. Have one really great year under your belt. And I know that that's not what the franchise necessarily wants to hear, but man, from a fan perspective, get that opportunity to see a guy who is, I'm going to say outright, but arguably the greatest player of all time suit up in your colors. And I say you make it happen if you can.
So I guess my confusion there is LeBron, we don't really know how many more years he has left, whereas Kawhi Leonard still has quite a big career in front of him. You'd really risk bringing in LeBron over bringing in Kawhi Leonard? Let's say you had your choice of one or the other, and they were definitely going to sign here. You would choose LeBron over Kawhi, or are you just choosing LeBron because you know that he could probably get you closer to a championship in 1 year than Kawhi could maybe in two or three?
Well, that's why I said it's tough. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I think it's tough. But I, you know, maybe this is just me being a little too much of a fanboy here, but I would risk it. I would risk 1 year with LeBron. He's been at 8 straight NBA finals, and I know he's in the Eastern Conference, and it's a different, you know, league out there basically, but he's been at 8 straight finals. He is arguably the greatest player to ever play the game. He just has so much going for him from a personality standpoint as well, that if any franchise has a chance to have him suit up for 1 year, and even if it mortgages the next five, because we're not talking, you know, let's get Dwight Howard on the roster for 1 year in his prime. We're not saying, you know, I like player X or player Y who is in their prime for another year on James. That's a very special player, a very special name, a very special guy. And I would be willing to give up the next 5 years for 1 to 2 years of LeBron, hands down. It may not be a popular opinion, but that's my opinion.
I really agree with the scenario you threw out there. I just, knowing we have to deal with Kevin Durant no matter how long LeBron stays or goes, I would be more comfortable knowing we had Kawhi Leonard on the staff to defend Durant, defend LeBron if he goes somewhere else, defend Paul George, defend James Harden. I guess I would just, or, you know, Jason Tatum, because he's going to be a force to reckon with here pretty soon. He already kind of is. I feel like you need someone that's an all-world defender to do that, and Portland's really short in that category. So I would agree with you. The LeBron play would definitely be one you have to do, but it also would make me extremely nervous wondering how we get past some of those guys I just mentioned.
Yeah, and you're not wrong in that. I mean, LeBron James has so many miles on his body that you can't ignore that, whereas Kawhi Leonard is 25 days older than my younger sister.
Right.
Right? So not that anybody listening to this knows my younger sister, but just put that in perspective, that Kawhi at 26 years old has an entire, he still has more than 50% of his career left in him.
Right.
And that's pretty impressive for a guy who has won a finals MVP, has second in league MVP voting, is a player who has not only been known as one of the greatest defensive players in the league for a very long time, but has changed his game enough to become known as one of the best two-way players. And he's just such a special player that I take nothing away from you saying you would think about that. I think it makes total sense.
Well, I mean, if we could get Drew Holiday with LeBron, I'd feel better about it. You know, especially if it's playoff Drew Holiday, not garbage during the regular season Drew Holiday. But I've seen so much bad defense from Portland in the last couple of years that it would be really hard for me, as amazing of a talent as LeBron is, which I know I would be eating crow after he went to like LA or somewhere and won a title in 9 months. I just feel like you have to go after the long con here and go after the long play and see what Kawhi can do. But I totally agree with you. LeBron being in Portland would be a game changer for one, but also just a life-changing experience to be able to see that, even if it's for 1 year. And we talked about mortgaging the future to get Paul George last year, and LeBron's obviously a step up. So I totally agree with your scenario. I'm just scared to do it, to be perfectly honest.
And like I said, I totally get that perspective. I see nothing with that. Fully admit that if LeBron came to Portland, I'd probably like Tuesday to try to afford tickets, which is less than ideal. So maybe we should not root for that to happen anyway. But that's where I stand on the matter.
Well, we'll see what of those four, if any, happen. So let's flip the script and say you keep the pick. Is there a guy that you expect to be at number 24 that you think can legitimately help this team in the next 2 to 3 years? Now, we've talked quite a bit on this show in particular about how Portland needs to win now. Well, we can kind of pump the brakes there because you may have noticed Damian Lillard's only 28, CJ McCollum's only 27, Yusuf Nurkic is, I believe, 23 or about to turn 23, Zach Collins is about to turn 20 or already is. These are low miles guys. They're not guys that are on their way out. They're not on bad knees or bad ankles. They're pretty safe, not injury prone players who are super talented. Now, we've probably seen them as good as they're going to get, at least together. I mean, Zach Collins obviously could get much better in the next couple of years, but right now, this is probably the best Blazers core we're going to see, so we need to add to it in the next 2 to 3 years to get a championship out of it, or at least contend for one. Is there a guy at 24 that you see playing on this team as either a role player or a starter that can help this team go deep in the playoffs?
There's nobody at 24 I can see as a potential starter. I think if you were looking at that, it was maybe to get a small forward in there who could be a consistent role player. I don't really see that so much, but chatting with Adam Frommel of Bleacher Report recently, and he threw out the name Jacob Evans, who is the Cincinnati guard, and I really, really actually like that. I think there's a strong possibility he's available at number 24. And, you know, Portland changed their defensive identity this year. They finished top 10 in defensive efficiency. I think they were between the Warriors and somebody else, which I must admit I don't remember who that somebody else was right now. But what I can tell you is it was right behind the Warriors, and it was top 10. And those are two very good things.
Right.
And so Portland doesn't necessarily need to focus on defense in the draft, but I think guard defense is still very important, right? I'm not saying you're going to get a first team all defense Tony Allen type of player, but a Jacob Evans could come in off the bench. If you truly want to start staggering minutes between Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum to make sure that one of them is on the court at all times, you could use somebody like a Jacob Evans to come in on whoever Lillard or McCollum is not defending at that moment, and it makes perfect sense as far as rotation goes. You know, I like Pat Connaughton. I think that he has a spot in this league for sure. And it's with Portland necessarily. I think that he's a great shooter, or he's a good shooter with great potential. I'm not sure he's ever going to become a Kyle Korver or a JJ Redick. So if you can look to replace someone like that with a defense-oriented guard who can take pressure off of Lillard or McCollum, that's who I want to see.
So if they can't get some of these guys they've been targeting, there's a couple options. There's the Boise State small forward, Chad Hutchinson or something like that.
Chandler
Hutchins. Then there's a kid out of Georgia Tech. I'm going to butcher this name, so I'm going to apologize to him in advance. His name is something like George Okabie or Okiopi. He's a 6'4 perimeter player. He's got some upside, but he sounds more like a project. There's also the Cincinnati guard you mentioned. Are any of these guys we should be excited about in year one, or are these guys that we would look for in year two or three?
Well, the Georgia Tech guy, his name is actually Jim. I'm with you though that I don't have a clue how to pronounce his last name. Okogie, Okogie, I'm not really sure. We'll call him Josh O.
I think I didn't fair. Even get the Josh so, part right. That's not good.
No, so it's Josh O.
We'll Is it Josh, Josh spelled O. George? Like, where did I get that from? That's not good. My sincere apologies to you, sir. I did not mean to butcher your name like that. We very much appreciate your game and who you are as a person. So. Sorry for that, and hope you have a stellar NBA career, and hopefully it's in Portland.
I think that he is going to be someone who's definitely available. He's looking like a borderline first round pick. So if Portland wants to reach on him just a little bit, it won't be out of the question, but he should be available. I do really think, though, that if you're looking for someone who can contribute right away, it is Jacob Evans out of Cincinnati, because he can come out here, he can play his defense, and, you know, you think about guys who are going to develop early in their career, and it's usually on the offensive end, because they're going to figure out how to shoot the NBA three-pointer, they're going to figure out how to play in isolation, or they're going to figure out how to get their butt in the post and kind of create sort of a niche attack that way. Offensive guys, yes, they need to get stronger and they need to get quicker, as everybody does coming into the NBA. But these are the guys who mentally, they know their roles, they come in, and they have absolutely no problem accepting those roles. And I think that that is the type of guy, not an offensive guy, who can make a big difference for Portland right away, including in the playoffs. You know, one of Portland's favorite trailblazers of all time, Wesley Matthews, he got his big contract based off of his rookie season playing defense against Kobe Bryant in the playoffs. And I'm not saying that this Allen kid is the exact same thing as a Wesley Matthews. I'm not saying he's going to come in and shut down a Kobe-type superstar his first year in the playoffs. But, and it doesn't usually happen with a Donovan Mitchell, also Utah, coming out and having an offensive explosion in the playoffs. It usually happens on the defensive end, and that is what I would love to see.
What I'm hearing, you're not saying this, what I'm hearing you say is we should call Utah, find out who they're going to draft, and draft that guy instead.
Yeah, absolutely.
It has to work, right? Why not?
Portland also offered Paul Millsap sort of a toxic contract that Utah ended up taking. So there's a lot of Portland, Utah history here that I
think
we talked about that last week,
right?
And, you know, Portland somehow ends up playing either Denver or Utah on the last game of the season every single freaking year. So I think there's a lot to that. Say just super quickly that it's unfortunate what happened to Wesley Matthews as far as his Portland tenure goes. He left on a bad note, but I do think he started out on a great note that Portland was willing to give him that contract. And, you know, someone like this kid out of Cincinnati, he wouldn't go undrafted, so it's not like he could leverage his own situation to get a bigger deal, but he would be that type of player who could come in and really make a difference on that end.
Well, and like Wesley and like CJ, we don't need him to start right away. So there's some time for him to develop behind the scenes and not necessarily be thrown to the wolves right away and destroy his psyche. So there's something to be said there that while it would be nice to see an impact player get drafted at 24, it's unrealistic because that's anything after number 15, 16 is pretty much, in my opinion, a second round pick. You're drafting for depth and future at that point. You're looking for someone that you can get today to actually play tomorrow. And, you know, you've got some nice pieces assembled over the last few years, and CJ took time to get going. You know, you mentioned that offensive players typically develop faster in the NBA, and I think there's some truth there. Damian obviously developed a lot faster than CJ did, and Wesley took some time to develop behind Brandon Roy, but once he got going, that was one of the best guards we've seen in Portland in a long time. And now that CJ is going after getting his shot, you know, you don't necessarily need to replace him, but it'd be really nice to have some depth behind him, or at least a guy that you can put on the perimeter and shut down some of the elite scorers. So we're getting close to the end time, so we got one last segment before we go. But, you know, you and I talked in the last several months, and it seemed like every team under the sun, and now they're all under the suns, pun intended, wants to trade up in this draft or collect assets in this draft or collect draft picks. Are you feeling like that's still the case? Everyone's super high on this draft being one of the deepest it's been in years? Or did the NCAA tournament kind of turn people against that and kind of even things out, where now we're thinking there's some studs to be had in the top five, top ten, but after that, it's kind of like any other year where there's some guys you could pick up, but you're not going to get superstars after the first five.
I think most people are starting to realize that this group is, how do I phrase this? Very deep in the lottery. I think that when we talk about a deep, when we talk about a deep draft, we like to think of the entire first round, and that's not a bad thing to think about. But I think that this particular class was looked at as very, very deep for a very long time, and now people are realizing, well, it's not necessarily heavy talent in the top 10 and the top 14, but it's also not your traditional deep class that's going to have all-stars and role players through the entire first round, early second round.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot to be excited about as far as the draft goes, and we could potentially see one of the better top 14 classes in a very long time. But beyond that, when I think you start to look at role players, which is why I'm so excited about this kid out of Cincinnati for Portland, because he's a, you know, put on your hard hat and go to work type of kid, which a superstar most likely, but is going to get the job done. And I think you're going to see a lot of that in the late first round.
And I think that's what Portland fans need to temper their expectations and realize, that this is a draft to build around what you already have. And while Olshay said that he wants to be more aggressive, I think you wait for free agency for that. I think the draft is a good time to just sit back and draft the guy that best fits what you need right now and work that into your formula over the next couple of years. You shouldn't be trying to look for the next big thing in the end of the first round.
Agreed.
So we're getting close to 45 minutes, so we got to sign off. But Bryant, it's been a heck of a roller coaster. I'm really excited to see what the NBA draft has to offer. I mean, we talked a lot about how you don't really know what's going to happen, and we really don't. I mean, the teams that are drafting don't even know what's going to happen yet. They're trying to figure it out as much as we are. They might have a little more insight, and they've got some insider knowledge, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of fun because it's unpredictable. Anything could happen. You know, as high as the Suns are on DeAndre Ayton right now, they might trade that pick or pick somebody else. You never know. You can't set your watch by it. But make sure you do set your clocks to Thursday night, because that's when the draft happens. So make sure you catch that. Brian, thanks again for joining the show. If you haven't already, please follow him on Twitter. He's at Bryant Knox. He's everywhere. He's on OSN. He's on ESPN. He's on Bleacher Report. He's on Fox. He's on NBC. He's on Comcast. Everywhere. If they're on the internet, and they should be, he's on their page. So check him out. Great guy. Bryant, thanks again. We really love having you on the show, and look forward to recapping this next week and seeing what kind of crazy roller coaster we saw. So we'll sign off, and thank you guys for checking us out. And it's only early in the week, but have a good weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt. He's Bryant Knox. Stay classy and stay tuned, Portland.